Hey, all, Scott Horton here. It's always safe to say that one should keep at least some of your savings in precious metals as a hedge against inflation. And if this economy ever does heat back up and the banks start expanding credit, rising prices could make metals a very profitable bet. Since 1977, Roberts & Roberts Brokerage, Inc. has been helping people buy and sell gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, and they do it well. They're fast, reliable, and trusted for more than 35 years. And they take Bitcoin. Call Roberts & Roberts at 1-800-874-9760 or stop by rrbi.co. All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, The Scott Horton Show, on Liberty Radio Network. Now, man, I have a whole cop section today. At the top of it is Rayford Davis and his blog, Blue Enmity. Huh, what an interesting name for a blog. Blue Enmity, it's at blueenmity.blogspot.com. Welcome to the show, Rayford. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, Scott. It's glad you're having me here.
Very happy to have you here. Tell me, who are you?
I am a former police officer.
Former police officer from where?
I spent 6 years, four on patrol and two as detective with the city of North Charleston Police Department in South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
It's about the eighth most dangerous city at the time I was there.
All right, now I'll tell the people the reason that you're on the show is because you emailed me and said, hey, I'm a former cop and I listen to your show and like it. It's not that you're stalking me, but you like it even though I say such horrible things about cops all the time. So that piqued my interest, and I read almost all of this essay here. Pretty much, yeah, I read it. This essay that you have at your blog, I guess it's your first one, about this shooting. And so, I guess, you know, I'm interested to know, how it is that anyone who was ever a cop, could have, you know, the slightest patience for a guy like me at all, even if you kind of got a different attitude about policing now. Palling around with Will Grigg is one thing, but I'm a hater. Come on, Rayford.
Yeah, you know what? You're right. It's really hard. I'm reminded of Upton Sinclair's quote, it's very difficult to get a man to understand something when his salary depends on him not understanding.
Mm-hmm.
And, when you have, you know, you're grown up with, hey, police are good and bad guys are bad. And it's when somebody comes and tells you different, that's very hard to accept. But certainly, my experience as a police officer, you know, that's the conclusion that I came to based on my experiences there.
All right. And so now you say that you conducted thousands of traffic stops. You were a cop for how long?
Well, 6 years. I mean,
6 years.
I was nobody special. I was just a normal cop. But you know, when you're on patrol, that's what you do with traffic stops. So
yep.
Make a couple a day and they start adding up.
Yep. All right. And so, well, tell me, I guess, can you go back to what you really thought, when you signed up and, what changed you? What made you, I mean, after 6 years, was it after 6 years or it was earlier than that that you, I guess from the very beginning, you started learning the job was a bit different than you'd expected, or how's that work?
Well, sure. You know, I grew up, you know, reading the Constitution, you know, conservative, thinking, hey, you know, I know cops do maybe some bad things here and there, but, you know, I'll be different and I can go in there and I didn't sign up to get honor and integrity or anything like that. I signed up to bring honor and integrity to law enforcement. I have a bachelor's degree in criminal justice. I thought I knew the law and had a good judgment. It didn't take long. I remember the first week I was there, out on patrol, during training, and I watched, one of our, special enforcement teams that go through particular neighborhoods that need special interest. And they had pulled over some poor kid on a moped, probably for, you know, not having his turn signal on long enough or something like that, and had obtain consent to search his moped, and they're tearing this thing apart looking for marijuana or whatever. And this kid's not happy about it, but he, you know, really didn't have a choice. And I knew right there that, you know, this war on drugs just doesn't seem quite right. However, you know, drugs are bad, and you know, they do lots of harmful things. And when you don't understand the effects of what a black market is and how actually when you make things illegal, that's what brings in the violence and the crime. And then you disenfranchise people from any type of dispute resolution. If you're a local drug dealer and you have a dispute, you have to use violence. You can't go to a court or something like that and say, hey, you know, this guy, you know, I've loaned him some product and he didn't pay me for it. I mean, you have nothing to do but go straight to violence.
And now, obviously, you know, you're different than the average cop, but does the average cop understand that? Because it doesn't seem like it's that difficult. Especially when you're living through the experience of it all the time and seeing how, you know, you make people outlaws and then they have to act like outlaws, like you say.
Right. You know, you do see it. And if you talk to cops, any cop about marijuana, oh, yeah, that's you know, we got to make that legal. But that's as far as I go. If you start questioning any more than that to say, hey, why are we messing with drugs at all? Why are we interfering with anyone's right to carry a weapon to defend themselves or anything like that? And then you question basically your entire reason for being there and everything you've ever been taught in your life. Mm-hmm. And that's very difficult to do.
In other words, they look at pot as just no big deal. It's like drinking a beer, so they don't care. But as long as we're talking about drugs that are actually bad for you, well, then those got to be illegal. Same basic, simplistic mindset without any thought to it.
Correct. And, yeah. And when you don't understand, if you don't know, if you haven't read Murray Rothbard or Lou Rockwell or anybody else that talks about, hey, there's this thing called natural law and free markets. And when you try to change those by adding laws to ban substances and to interfere with people's normal exchanges, that's what brings the problems.
Yeah. Well, now, so... It's interesting, you know, it's not that, I mean, I guess you weren't a detective out solving homicides or whatever. Like you say, you're basically a traffic cop out there pulling people over, but then every traffic violation becomes a drug war investigation, basically, right? Some kind of fishing expedition.
Absolutely. They all do. I mean, certainly you have people out there, they're thieves and, committing violence against others. But it's mainly the drugs and guns that, you know, that's what you're looking for. That's what every traffic stop, that's what you're doing. And that's what generates the violence is because people, they have a little bit of weed or, you know, a gram of cocaine or something that's, and that they know, hey, I'm fixing to get arrested. I'm probably going to go to jail. It's going to cost me thousands of dollars you know, they're willing to, try to resist or to flee because of that. And that is part of what I want to put out is, hey, that's what's making it so dangerous for the police as well.
Right. Yeah, I told a story before. I talked to a childhood friend of mine after 25 years or something, and he was a D.C. cop. He said, I chased crackheads around all night. I said, oh, for crying out loud, you're the only reason they're running. Don't you know that... You basically invented crack by outlawing cocaine use. I mean, what is this? This is really the life that you're living? I can't believe it. You know?
That's right. That's right. For people that, and law enforcement officers that don't understand it, I try to explain it to them. Ask them a question. When is the last time you've seen, two convenience store owners that sell beer and alcohol or two, liquor distributors have a shootout? They don't do it. A fifth of whiskey is just as dangerous as cocaine and marijuana. But,
all right. Well, hold it right there, Rafer. We got to take this break. Everybody, we're talking with Rafer Davis. He's at blueenmity.blogspot.com. He's a former cop. We're talking about the way things are now. ScottHorton.org. We'll be right back. Hey, all, Scott Horton here. I want to tell you about this great new book, Livin' La Vida Baroka, American Culture in an Age of Imperial Orthodoxies by Thomas Harrington. While he comes from the left, Harrington has little time for much of what is passed off under that label today. Like us libertarians, he puts peace and freedom first. The book's got great essays on American fascism, empire, the Israeli occupation, the left and Obama, liberalism and the state, and some interesting lessons from the history of Imperial Spain. Livin' La Vida Baroka by Thomas Harrington. Check it out at scotthorton.org/books or scotthorton.org/Amazon. All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. Talking with Rayford Davis, former cop from Charleston, South Carolina. And we're talking about the way things are now, the futility of the war on drugs and the destruction of American liberty that comes hand in hand with it, the cops' unwillingness to understand the situation for what it is because... They have every incentive to not understand, of course. Although everybody who's not a cop, pretty much, and the rest of society, that's maybe the most paranoid of and ill-informed of moms, are against the drug war. Now, hell, William F. Buckley from the National Review, the father of the new right from the 1950s, he came out against the war on drugs 25 years ago or something. Everybody who understands anything about economics at all, left, right, commie, libertarian, or anybody else knows that it cannot work for anything but providing jobs for government employee union members. You know, that's basically what it's all about. But, you know, here's the other thing, and you mentioned this in your emails to me, Rayford, was the war on guns, too. And, of course, you got to be a libertarian to be good on both. For some reason, it's like a magical thing to understand the economics of gun control and drug control in the same kind of a way. And we seem to be in a situation here. I got a headline, 23 people killed by American police in the span of 1 week. And I don't know exactly. I assume most of those weren't armed at all, but maybe some of them had a gun, but they weren't necessarily doing anything with it. And we live, it's such a contradiction. We live in a society where everybody knows guns are legal and there's some kind of concealed or open carry now in all 50 states. We got 300 million guns for 300 million Americans, although pretty much about 150 million Americans are the gun owners and the other 150 million not. But still, that's 300 million guns in private ownership circulating around in open markets, regulated ones, but legal markets in America. A small percentage of black market guns there. And yet the cops act like if anybody has a gun, kill them. If anybody has a gun, they're trying to kill you with it. You go home tonight. If they don't, tough. And so you see just over and over, just people, they'll say, well, he had a gun. But, you know, I've heard, and I'm no former soldier or anything like that, but I've heard soldiers and I've heard cops and I've heard people who were neither say, well, listen, unless I can see the barrel of a gun and they're really an imminent threat to me, I'm not shooting somebody, right? Like, that's the standard. Not someone may have a gun in their waistband. Not they were reaching into their car for what could have been something or something. When you see that barrel of the gun pointing at you, yeah, you gotta be a quick draw. But the alternative is you murder innocent people all day. And that's what we've got now, is a bunch of cops who somebody told them to expect that anybody with a gun is trying to kill them. Even if the cops are breaking into their house in the middle of the night.
Well, you know what? I've had that gun and that barrel of that gun pointed at me, and it's a terrifying experience. You know, fortunately, I did not shoot anyone. I didn't have to, and I was able to survive the encounter. But it's the fact that the gun in possession is de facto legal. I know they have all these concealed carry laws and all of this, but cops still. You know, they basically treat anybody with a gun as it's somewhat illegal. And that's what makes the danger. Hey, we have this thing called the Second Amendment that's not to be infringed, but yet it's infringed. And you see that attitude increasing more and more. And this is coming from cops who are generally conservative. And they're, you know, hey, they're NRA and, you know, don't take my gun from me. You'll pry it from my cold, dead hands. And then they go right out, 10th Amendment, Oath Keeper type guys. That's what they all are. And then they go right out and treat anybody with a gun like a criminal first and then lawful citizen later.
And especially racial minorities too. There's just no way around it that.
Hey.
You know, I mean, in the New York Times, did you see a couple of months ago, they ran this article that I swear to, I mean, the headline was, gee whiz, everybody, liberal do-gooder, Upper East or West Side or whatever it is, people in New York. I've only been there once. Well, look, did you know how sometimes black people aren't criminals? Well, guess what? Sometimes the black people who aren't criminals own guns and go shoot down at the range and they're gun owners and they're basically like white people who own guns. Like, that was the tone of the entire article. It was like, can you believe it that a black guy would own a gun, or a black woman even, for any reason other than to rob a store? Was like the whole New York Times article. It was like a Sunday weekend magazine piece. Jeez, look everyone, black gun owners. And if that's what the New York Times thinks, imagine what all the cops think. You know?
Well, you're right. You know, there's just very little, individual racism, or, you know, I never saw any police officer, you know, just really, be a racist. But, two things. I would love to see the black gun owning community and, you know, like the NRA. That's two groups that I think could get together and really, bridge this, problem and get together on some issues.
Right. Yeah, you know, the ACLU is actually slowly but surely getting a little bit better on guns, because they're realizing that, like, this, their special report on the SWAT team raids, that, you know, the cops have this so-called matrix of the threat, and you get assigned a number. I guess you know it better than me. And so, but if you're a gun owner, it doesn't matter whether you're just wanted for a bunch of old speeding tickets and they've never had any cause to think that you might, be a threat to a cop in your whole life. Doesn't matter. If they're kicking in your door, that makes you a defensive threat against them, right? Like Iran is to the empire. Well, it's not fair for you to just sit there armed. And so, that's the way they look at it. And so, they include that information as a reason to raid people. Well, the ACLU looks at that and says, well, you know, geez, I'm not sure if that's fair, because after all, and they recognize there are a lot of law-abiding gun owners in America. Just because someone has a gun doesn't mean that they deserve to be executed by the law.
Certainly. You know, law enforcement does a terrible job of understanding that and say, hey, people are armed and they have a right to do so. And they just don't get it.
Yeah. All right, now, so I wonder, too, about the training, because it seems like what we have here, and maybe it's a myth that there was ever really a doctrine of use the minimum amount of force for any given situation, because really your sacred duty is to protect the rights of the suspects of even the very worst crimes. You're there to protect them ostensibly from the lynch mob, to make sure they get a fair trial, that they're presumed innocent, and all these kinds of things, not to be the punishers out there going after people. You're supposed to be protecting our rights and using the minimum amount of force, and yet it seems like all cops in America, SWAT team or not, are trained on the Powell Doctrine, overwhelming force. If you have to cripple them, go ahead and break their spine if you want to, in order to neutralize any possible threat to you at any given time. So just... this is a big part of the shootings all the time too. Is, you know, he looked at me funny. I had to.
Hey,
do it.
There are bad guys out there, and you know, you do anybody, even a private libertarian world security force, would want to protect themselves. What I want police officers to think is, when is it okay to use that force, to put yourself in the position where you need to use that force in the first place? Hey, you know, there's this thing beyond policy and procedures that you learn to train. There's things beyond the state law or the federal law or even the Supreme Court. There's things called natural law. And, you know, you can't use force against a person unless they use violence against you to begin with. And just carrying around a gun is not using violence.
Well,
dealing drugs
in kind of any old arrest. Whether are they really training the cops nowadays? You know, the new ones in the academy that look, the people out there, they're animals. You're a soldier in the war against their barbarity, and so go out there and get them. Or are they taught at all about, like, hey, your job is protecting these people, so take it easy on them out there, or what? You know, and it seems like that would be the obvious training, the latter there.
Well, it goes back and forth. You know, certainly, I'm sure here locally, with that, you saw the police officer, the dash cam, in Columbia where the state trooper, shot the guy when he asked him to go get his wallet, and he went and got it and he thought it was a gun and shot him. And so, you know, everything will calm down for a little while. Hey, just last week though, I went to a funeral of a local, police officer. He was shot and killed. He was responding to, reports of a disturbance at a apartment complex. They go to knock on the door to see what's up, and the guy fired a rifle through the door, and killed an officer and wounded another one. So they kind of go back and forth with that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, still, it seems like, you know, the job is, and boy, it's starting at 80 grand or something here in Austin, Texas. So, you know, well, maybe that's part of the problem. It should be an underpaid job like a school teacher that, like, you know what? You do it because you really want to go out there and protect people. And you know that you're taking a risk and, that you have to restrain yourself in a situation where you might want to, do worse. And you are putting yourself in danger in some circumstances, but, just because you have to be careful doesn't mean you have to be brutal. And you know, and here's what I'm really trying to get at, not that I'm doing a good job of it. It's treating everybody like they're hardened criminals when the cops obviously know, they must know, that no, we are not all hardened criminals. Hardened criminals are hardened criminals, and everybody else is everybody else. And yet they treat us like they're the only ones who are the everybody else. And the civilians, every non-cop, every non-government employee in America is a dangerous felon to be, you know, intercepted and interdicted and indefinitely detained. They treat us like we're scum. Everyone. I mean, I know from the first time I ever met a cop in person when I was a little kid, he screamed in my face like a Nazi drill sergeant and called me a damn dog and this and that. And I've hated every single cop on earth ever since then. You know, screw these guys. What natural authority does this pig have over me? None. And I see them treat every single one of my neighbors like this all day, every day. Some mom right now is being pulled over on the side of the street within a couple of miles from here and is being treated like the lowest scum of the earth by, guess who? The lowest scum of the earth. Only he's got the flashing lights and the little costume jewelry.
Well, you know, we think we do some good. I would say about 30%. If you had to put it, you know, there are some bad guys out there, and to deal with them. But certainly I was the biggest jerk, in the world many times. And you know what? I had no idea. I did not realize that that's how I was coming across.
Yeah. Well, you know, now you're right. I mean, there are people and everything, but I can't give them the benefit of the doubt. They don't treat people like they're innocent until proven guilty, so I assume they're all guilty until proven innocent. After all, when was the last time you ever heard of a cop arresting his partner for felony assault or murder, manslaughter, whatever? Whoa, that was an unjustified shoot. You're under arrest right now, buddy. That has never happened ever, because they're all criminals. They're all just co-conspirators aiding and abetting and covering up for each other. They commit crimes all day, and they never arrest each other. That's the proof that the whole barrel is bad. There may be one good apple in there, but you quit for some reason, right? What happened to that?
Well, I'll tell you. I did 4 years on patrol. I went to Detective Division for 2 years, and I worked with sexual assaults and juvenile crimes. And so, hey, right? I mean, cops can't screw that up. I mean, but one of the last things where I said, hey, I've got to get out, is actually I was investigating a sexual assault, and I did not believe that the suspect actually committed the crime. And I was talking to my supervisor about it, and I was saying, now I didn't know that for sure, but I talked to my supervisor and said, hey, you know, if I was on the jury, I would not convict this guy. So why am I charging him criminally? And it was like, you know, the needle scratching across the record. Oh, wait a minute. You know, no, you can't make that decision. You've got to charge this guy. And right there, is when I, you know, just felt this, understood a moral injury.
Mm-hmm.
And this, hey, wait a minute. I'm fixing to basically kidnap a guy, destroy his life. Even if he's found not guilty, you know, he's going to be thousands of dollars in debt and have this, you know, sexual assault arrest on his record.
Wow.
And right then I said, you know, even when you're trying to do good, the government.
So you quit then?
Government
or what
can't
happened?
Get it right. Well, I got lucky, if you can say. I was directing traffic one day and got hit by a truck.
Oh, damn. Well, but so what happened to that guy? He was prosecuted though?
Well, he was charged. Yes, charged him.
Did you contact his lawyer?
I did, as a matter of fact. You know, he had a public defense attorney, and now I talked to the prosecutor, even after I charged him, and said, hey, you know, I'm really uncomfortable with this case. And this particular prosecutor said, yeah, okay, well, you know, we'll let the process work. And I called his defense attorney and told him, my reservations. And apparently he talked to the prosecutor and got the case dismissed.
Oh, yeah. Wow. I was going to say,
hey,
yeah, let the process
damage,
work.
You know,
means,
the damage was done already.
Yeah, I mean, let the jury decide, even though the prosecutor doesn't necessarily believe in it. That's good that the defense lawyer was able to get. I was going to say, when you said, you know, how can that go wrong? I was going to say, yeah, falsely accusing somebody. Because, like you said, damage is done. Even being charged is certainly on a charge like that. It's guilty till proven innocent kind of thing.
That's right. And so, you know, as far as why did I get out? Well, that decision was made for me.
Yeah. Man, well, you certainly were a good one then. That's for sure. Listen, I'm sorry. We're way over time and I got to let you go. But I hope that we can talk again. I hope you'll keep writing. I like your first one here at blueenmity.blogspot.com, Rayford. And I hope, you know, we talk police issues again in the future.
Well, thank you, Scott. I appreciate to speak out.
Yeah, it was really good to hear your story and to hear your point of view on this stuff. All right. So, yeah, we'll talk again soon. Thank you. That's Rayford Davis, everybody. Blue Enmity. A libertarian cop's view of law enforcement at blueenmity.blogspot.com. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State. In The War State, Swanson examines how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy both expanded and fought to limit the rise of the new national security state after World War II. This nation is ever to live up to its creed of liberty and prosperity for everyone. We are going to have to abolish the empire. Know your enemy. Get The War State by Michael Swanson. It's available at your local bookstore or at Amazon.com in Kindle or in paperback. Just click the book in the right margin at scotthorton.org or thewarstate.com. Hey, Al Scott here for Whole Food Multicomplete at wholefoodcomplete.com. Whole Food Multicomplete is an entire supplement program in one bottle containing 100% RDA of vitamins and minerals, plus live probiotics, digestive enzymes, antioxidant herbs, energy nutrients, and more. It's made in America using real foods and live probiotics. No chemical synthetics. It's soy-free, gluten-free, and independently tested and verified. They're so sure you'll love it, they're taking 20% off your first order with coupon code Scott Horton. Satisfaction is guaranteed at wholefoodcomplete.com. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson knows his stuff. He made a killing running his own hedge fund and always gets out of the stock market before the government-generated bubbles pop, which is, by the way, what he's doing right now, selling all his stocks and betting on gold and commodities. Sign up at WallStreetWindow.com and get real-time updates from Mike on all his market moves. It's hard to know how to protect your savings and earn a good return in an economy like this. Mike Swanson can help. Follow along on paper and see for yourself. WallStreetWindow.com. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to let you know Pizza Noir, Book 1 by Denver Day, is now available at your local bookstore and Amazon.com. Grab a cold cup of coffee and follow Tacoma, Washington Detective Rick Thompson as he investigates the mystery behind the mass murder of dozens of hot young strippers and roller derby girls all across the West, while he learns new things about the world and himself. Pizza Noir, Book 1 by Denver Day. Normal as we knew it is a thing of the past. Find it at scotthorton.org/books or scotthorton.org/Amazon.